In today's episode, I connected virtually with Erin Landry-Baker, who is passionate about undertaking projects that have a positive and lasting impact on health, well-being, and safety of individuals, organizations, and communities. Prior to founding Yellow Door Solutions, Erin had the privilege of holding leadership and advisory roles at the Ministry of Health, Ministry of the Attorney General, Royal Victoria Regional Health Centre, and Connections, a not-for-profit serving at-risk youth in Northern Ontario. Erin is a PROCI certified change management practitioner and holds a master's in health administration from the University of Toronto and an honors in psychology from the University of Western Ontario. Let's get into today's episode.
This is your host, Amy Orsno, and welcome to the Transmit Safety Podcast, a podcast that will help you achieve a holistic approach to workplace health and safety with practical solutions introducing new or alternative ways of approach to put that value of safety into action. So fill up that workplace approved beverage of your choice and tune in to today's episode.
I have stepped in a few landmines when it comes to change management. And when I met Erin, I knew immediately that I wanted to bring her on the podcast because using and picking a change management expert's brain can be so valuable from a health and safety perspective, because really that's what we're doing all the time, is that we are managing change. And Erin is the founder and principal of Yellow Door Solutions with over 18 years of experience, deep understanding of the human side of change to support her valued healthcare, not-for-profit retail and technology clients. Erin, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how did you land up being a change management expert?
Yeah. Hi, Amy. Thank you so much for having me here today. I know it's not going to air during Health and Safety Week, but we're recording during Health and Safety Week. So it's just such a pleasure and an honor to be spending a bit of time with you during a special week for you and your listeners. So thank you for having me. Yeah, a little bit about me and a bit about Yellow Door. So yeah, it's hard to believe 18 years of experience in a variety of different settings. And yeah, the common thread through a lot of that 18 years is through whether working in not-for-profit, working in public sector, working in healthcare, now more recently, a bit more in that digital technology space, also in the retail space, change has been that common thread throughout all of those years. So saw some writing on the wall about, about 5 or 6 years ago, seeing that there were going to be some big changes in healthcare looming. And so I went and got certified in change management and really set off this journey of the work that I get to do with so many different clients in healthcare largely. But like I said, starting to branch out from that. And so, yeah, had the opportunity to work with on projects with lots of complex stakeholders, some really challenging subjects, some positive changes, some less popular changes, I guess I could say, whether they were required or not. So yeah, so excited to talk a bit more about some of that journey and some of the things that people can take away into their own professional lives.
For the listeners, maybe can you explain what a high level flyover, like what is change management? What does a change management expert kind of do? What does that look like when we say, what is change management?
Yeah. So, and I actually thank you so much for asking that, because I think that there are a lot of mixed definitions of change management. Some of them are accurate, some of them are less accurate. So yeah, so change management. So I'm certified by PROCI as a change management practitioner. And so I do adopt their definition of, so formally, it's really the process for engaging employees, building support, and managing resistance once a change has been defined. So really, it's that when we think about states of change, there's current state, there's future state, and then there's that transition state in between. So it's all that messiness going from a current state to a future state, what we call the transition state. So that's usually when people start to get a little bit, you know, worried, they get scared, they get angry, they get sad, or they get really excited and they get really enthusiastic about change. All of the emotions are sometimes experienced when you're trying to implement a change. So it's really about the process for engaging, supporting, and then managing resistance once that change has been defined. My own personal definition of change, amidst all of that technical language, it's really about being kind and compassionate to people as they experience change. So when I went and got certified, I was like, oh, I had been leading all of these changes for so long and throughout my career in all these different spaces. And I was like, oh, this is just a framework and a system for being kind and compassionate to people as they experience change. So yeah, that's my own personal definition of change management.
And I'm sitting here as somebody in the health and safety space, really, which is all about change, whether or not it's a changing of a policy, practice, procedure, changing of people's perception of a rule or a policy, changing of people's buy-ins. Like when you and I first started to talk about change management, to me, the light bulbs were just firing in terms of how important it is for a health and safety practitioner or professional to understand the elements of change management. And maybe can you expand upon that? Like, how important is it for somebody working in health and safety to understand change management in terms of how it relates to their successes?
Yeah. So I think maybe a good place to start is to start with ProSize 5 building blocks for successful change. And I'm going to teach everyone the acronym ACGAR. So
ready for it.
So get your pencils out, everybody. So it's the model or the framework that they use is ACGAR. So it's ADKAR. And the A stands for awareness. So that means that people, this is also like how people experience change and how they move through that change continuum. So A is awareness of change. So people know and understand why a change is happening. They understand the nature of the change, why it's necessary, and what is the risk of not changing. So I think this is super relevant to people working in health and safety. People are understanding the risk of not changing and the implications for that. When people are in that state of awareness or you achieved awareness, you'll hear people say, I understand why. The D in the ACGAR model is desire. And that's when people realize, okay, what's in it for me to adopt this change and to embrace it means that people have made a decision to participate. They may not necessarily have the skills or ability yet to fully embrace the change and implement it, but people have the desire and willingness to maybe follow along to the next steps of the change. The K in ACGAR is knowledge, and that's understanding how to change. So people have, okay, they might not necessarily have the skills, but they're like, okay, I understand. Like Amy's telling me as a health and safety professional that we're going to be doing this change. I'm willing to support it. The K in the ACGAR model is Amy's also telling me that we're going to get some training. And so I'll know how to change. And you'll hear people say, I know how we're going to get from point A to point B. So the second A is ability. And that's when people have received the training, they're able to demonstrate that they have the new capability, new skill, new knowledge to change. And you're starting to observe and see that people have changed their behavior or, you know, starting to comply with maybe a new policy or a new piece of legislation that you've implemented or you're getting an organization to comply with. And then the final one is the R, and that's the reinforcement where people are like, the way you'll know is that people are saying, okay, I'm going to continue to do this. People are doing this in a sustained way. People are really adopting that change. And really, it's now just become second nature. So those are the building blocks of change.
And is this a type of kind of process that you use with small change, big changes? It doesn't matter. This kind of approach can be adopted regardless of the scale.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I use this with my kids. So, So if there's like certain things that they need to change about their behavior or things that we need to change in the house, then yes, it works on, you know, on a very personal and with my kids, it works in a very large scale change where you're always trying to just move people along that ATGAR model. So just to reiterate, it's awareness, desire, knowledge, ability, and reinforcement. So, and I'll continue to reinforce that, because what I would advise is that people always keep that model and that framework in their head as they have discussions with people as they're navigating and leading change in their respective organizations.
It was pretty, I had a little bit of a laugh maybe about 3 weeks ago, because you and I had been planning this podcast for a while and we had talked about ProSci and you were educating me about what that process was.
Yeah.
And I was talking with somebody else and we were talking about change and health and safety, some changes. And they went, but they said, oh, and my company uses ProSci. And I was like, oh, I know what that is. In my mind, like, was a little bit, oh, I don't have to pretend that I know what that is. I legit know what that is now. Is ProSci one of those philosophies that have been universally adopted? Like, what makes that ProSci approach apparently very common within the...
So there are lots of schools of thought around change management. So there's different models. There's Cotter's, there's McKinsey, there's ProSci. There are lots of different schools of thought around change management. And they're all great. And I will sometimes stray into some of those other philosophies or doctrines or schools of thought around change management when it suits the situation. I think the thing that is great about ProSci is that it is a brand that is becoming increasingly recognized and asked for change management practitioners. They do offer the certification and a whole bunch of tools that I use as a change management practitioner. It's also based on, I believe it's over 20 years of evidence. They're always refreshing their materials. They're always evolving their models. And they're constantly researching, and it's always evidence-based and evidence-informed model and framework. So that, to me, sits quite well because it's researched and it's backed by lots of input from other practitioners as well who are out there actually doing the work of change management. So
if you're sitting here thinking, oh, what am I going to do for my continuous professional development points for this year? Maybe consider looking at some change management classes.
Ah, yeah.
When it comes to maybe some common challenges that you can face or that you've experienced in your years of change flow and change management, what are some common challenges faced that, you know, our listeners can maybe anticipate or start to think about, how would I navigate that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say the one that I am most consistently running up against, regardless of which set I'm working in, because I get the opportunity to work with lots of different clients. But I would say that one of the big things that has been an issue over the last several years is the concept of change saturation. So in our personal lives and professional lives over the last several years, there has been an abundance of change that has happened due to the pandemic and all of the things that have had to change, whether it's moving into practicing in an online environment, working in and out of the home, or transitioning into a home office and then transitioning back. We've all experienced a massive amount of change over the last several years, and we don't experience change in a vacuum. So the amount of change that we experience in our personal life, it will impact the amount of change that we can take on in our professional lives as well. So like we are, yeah. So you can just imagine the level of saturation that I am detecting in so many different organizations. I am advising all my clients that everyone is saturated. I think we're starting to ease off of that a little bit right now as we exit the pandemic. But I think that saturation is something that every organization is struggling with because we've experienced so much change. And then what happens with saturation is we get to a certain level of too much change, and then it starts to have a bad impact. It starts to have negative consequences and impact on people. People start to get confused. They get fatigued. There's burnout. There's turnover. And then there's also consequences that end up showing up in on projects. And then also it escalates up into organizations. But it just creates a lot of confusion, fatigue, and inability to take on more change. So I'm certain that health and safety professionals have come up against this where people are just putting their hands up and saying, I can't deal with one other change because I've had it up to here, up to my eyeballs in changes and projects. And so, nope. And then the resistance comes up. So I would say that's a really big one. And then resistance in general. Yeah. So resistance to change. So that could be triggered by saturation, but it could be triggered by a whole number of reasons. It could be because maybe the change that's being implemented, maybe people don't understand it enough. Maybe they don't understand why it's necessary. So maybe a lack of understanding of the why. Maybe they don't understand what's in it for them. People could be scared. I had the pleasure of attending a recent session about reframing resistance and really trying to dig beyond just seeing someone as being resistant and trying to understand the unmet need that is happening that is triggering maybe fear or a reaction. So always remaining curious about why someone might be reacting with resistance, because resistance at the end of the day is a very human reaction to change. We like our comfort. We like to remain comfortable. We like, for the most part, even though we might say we don't, status quo is sometimes easier, and changing takes you out of a comfort zone. So when you do that to a human, you get a variety of different reactions. So
I think that's part of why we say it, in order to be a really effective health and safety leader or just a leader in general, you need to have empathy.
Absolutely.
Need to have that empathetic perspective of, I wonder what they're feeling. I wonder what they're thinking, and not just saying, oh, because to me, resistance is an outcome of an emotion that they're feeling, and really, okay, I see your resistance, but what's behind that?
Yes.
Really getting to that underpinning why, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah. You really have to, I would say it's very important, especially when you're experiencing resistance, that you stay super curious and you listen to the objections, because there could be a way that the change, the way it's being implemented or the way it's being communicated is, you know, it's just, it might not be landing well, or it might not be well understood, or maybe there's some things that need to be tweaked about the change, right? I think there's always opportunity to engage folks and get their fingerprints on developing a change. It's not always possible, but ideally you are engaging early, you're engaging often, and getting people to participate in that change design in order to get people's voices represented in ultimately what the change ends up being.
Looking back at some of your projects, how would you define a successful change? Like, what are the elements that you use to measure the success of the change management process?
Yeah, I think it always depends on the nature of the project. So there's one project that really sticks out in my mind, because I think that the results that we got just blew me away and made me so happy. Because we measured and we got some really great data out of it. So one project that I had the ability to be a part of was the merger of two organizations. So it was two organizations that were coming together. There was an acquiring organization and a smaller organization that was being absorbed into that larger organization. There were a lot of feelings about that. So it was an organization of about 600 people merging, or acquiring an organization that was about 30 people. There were, like I said, a lot of different feelings about that. There was a lot of apprehension, lots of nervousness, some shock. Some people were angry. The anger wasn't, it was more shock and just so surprised. They were worried about that they were going to lose this family feeling within their smaller organization being absorbed by a larger organization. And just so happened, we had done all of this work and the project, the merger went live April 1, 2020. It's a healthcare organization. But so you can just imagine the way people were just experiencing the world. It was a really terrifying time for myself included. And, you know, and for the organization, I mean, everyone was just trying to figure out what was going on April 1, 2020, but that was in the midst of everything being locked down, everything being shut down. And the acquired organization was a adult day service program organization. I had the pleasure of doing the project management work, but also the change management strategy to make sure that everything ran smoothly, that we were looking at that human side of change and making sure that those, especially those incoming, because we looked at the integration and realized, okay, the biggest impacted stakeholders, the ones that we're going to be experiencing the most amount of change, were going to be this small like all of the members of the smaller organization being absorbed into this larger organization. There were lots of concerns, lots of worry about losing that family feel to their organization. They were going to have to learn all the different policy and procedures at a new, bigger organization. They were moving from paper-based systems to fully digital system.
Layers upon layers upon layers.
Layers and layers and layers of change and a lot of worry and legitimate. Like, that's scary. Your organization, a lot of people have worked there for like a large number of years, and then suddenly they're going to be part of a new organization that they're not familiar with. Just massive amount of change that these individuals were experiencing and was very concerned about their well-being and also how they were going to integrate into this new organization in the absence of that one-to-one time and all of that. So was very concerned, large volume of change and then layer and layer of change, and then also a super scary time for these individuals working with a very vulnerable patient population, client population. So the way we're constantly doing temperature checks. So even though, so I would say we're always measuring, we're always asking the question, we're always collecting data, like, how are you feeling? What are you excited about? What are you concerned about? People were sharing things like, I don't know. I don't know if I can trust this new organization. I don't know how we're going to acquire the new skills that we're going to need to use these new systems. We don't know all of their new policy and procedures. So it's just that constant measurement. And there were some times where it didn't feel like we were being successful because there were still some worry and people were still worried about job loss. That was a big thing that seemed that no matter how many times we said no one's losing their jobs, people still were very much concerned about that. Now, that all being said, one of the things that you are concerned about when you integrate two organizations or any big change really is you worry about turnover. We didn't want to lose anyone. And so that was one of our measures. I think we measured 3 months after the integration or the merger between the two organizations, we didn't lose anyone, which was just an amazing data point that we were all pretty excited about. And then we measured a number of different things, but one of the things that I think was really exciting when the data came through was, how did you feel throughout the transition? Do you agree with the statement that you felt supported and engaged throughout the transition? And 100% of the survey respondents, because it was an anonymous survey, 100% of the respondents either agreed or strongly agreed that they felt that they were engaged and supported. And that was really what we were doing. I said, in that definition of change management, it's engaging and supporting people as they experience change. And the fact that people on the other side of a really, really challenging time and a big integration during a really scary time felt engaged and supported by that new organization was like, that just, I was so proud of the clients that I got to work with because I know that they took these painstaking efforts to minimize disruption, to make people feel heard, to make them feel supported and engaged. And so that felt like success to me, that people didn't leave and people left many, like, just glowing comments about the new leaders that they were going to be working with. So it was just such a, it was just an amazing thing that we managed to get through all of that. And people still felt great and excited about their new organization. Like that was just, it was so fantastic.
Communication is key when it comes to change management then.
Couldn't agree more. We had a fantastic communicator on that project, and I've had the privilege of working with so many great communicators on projects.
What are some key points to think about, to consider when it comes to communication through the stages and through the various levels of stakeholders? What are some key factors to remember when developing a communication strategy around that?
First of all, so to anyone who is implementing a change, my top suggestion is get cozy with your communications folks. If you have that within your organization, I always say I'm thick as thieves with comms. So develop that relationship. Always be working really closely with communications. If you have that, if you're lucky enough to have that resource within your organization. If not, always start with why. So your first objective, so we're going to go back to that ACAR model. So one of the big things is you're really going to want to start to build that awareness, and you're going to want to build your communication strategy to include some of those ACAR concepts. So early on, you're building awareness. You are trying to help people understand the why of the project. What is the risk of not changing? Why are we doing this? You might want to be aligning that to your organization's broader like strategic plan. There are pillars that your project aligns to, and align to those strategic pillars. And yeah, so you want to be initially raising awareness of the why of the project. And then also just talking to people and constantly accessing data. And you don't need a complicated process. Having those hallway conversations with folks, that's data collection. So if people are sharing with you, well, I'm not entirely clear on this, or this is why I don't think it's going to work, well, then build that into your communications plan. So you're always going to be trying to drive excitement and get people to shift into that desire phase and get people excited and get people to understand what's in it for me. That's also a really important piece. And then you also want to be celebrating success in that communications plan. So always trying to have fun with your communications, keep it lighthearted. Some of these projects are very heavy. They're very serious, but try and bring some levity and fun into your communications. It doesn't always have to be super, you know.
Yeah, sometimes it's being aware of just the organizational culture, and your word selection choice can make a big difference.
Yeah. And recognition of maybe where you were previous, because sometimes as a health and safety professional, what you might be doing is ushering in new policy and procedures. And it might require a sunset of some historical policy and procedures that other people may have taken painstaking efforts to implement or write themselves, or, you know, and so acknowledging that work in the communications, giving people recognition for the amazing work that they've done, but now we're ushering in these new, more compliant, or whatever it is that you are implementing. I think that's also something that's really important too. So just a quick example of something that I'm toying with right now with a client. We are moving from a paper-based system for waitlist management at a hospital. And so it's going to require the eventual elimination of a fax machine. Yes, we do still use fax machines in healthcare. We are working to make it safer and using a more digitized system that reduces some of that risk and all of that. But people have been using fax machines for like decades. So we want to acknowledge that transition from fax machine to a fully digital system. So we are planning a fax machine funeral for when it's time to shut that fax machine down and stop using it. And then we're just going to have, you know, acknowledge the life that it got to lead up until this point. And I think everyone's excited to see it go, but let's also acknowledge the past and then move on.
And to me, like the scene from Office Space came out, it was like a funeral, but then you take the fax machine to the backyard and you just like the angst
and the frustration that this machine has had with you. It's also letting that go.
The Office Space reference did come up. And I said, sure, if that's how you want to process your grief, that's totally fine. But everyone has to bring the required PPE so that we don't have any debris in our eyes or anything like that. So just a little plug for health and safety when we're having fun and saying goodbye to.
We're more than willing to do that in a virtual space. Everybody bring your VR goggles. And kind of to wrap things up, and we could talk, I think, for hours, if not days, on change management. But what advice would you give to a new health and safety practitioner, professional, somebody who's maybe not aware of that, what change management is or how it can, I think, really help them leverage that change process? What kind of advice would you give for our listeners who are looking to improve their overall change management skills?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So they could follow me on LinkedIn because I often post, and they could also subscribe to my newsletter at www.yellowdoorsolutions.com and sign up or subscribe for the newsletter because there's always some good juicy tidbits and readings I try to send along to my subscribers. And also ProSci, they also, if you're you can follow them on LinkedIn. They always have great webinars. I still benefit as a change practitioner. I attend these all the time and really benefit from the teachings that are offered there. And yeah, so that would be my suggestion, would be to just start there with some reading and following some or other change practitioners as well who put out content. Highly recommend just reading up in those different spaces, and ProSci as well for some pretty, they give some very generic change management tips and competency skill building material.
But for more specific or for some more direct support, yeah, I would agree with Erin. Go and check out her newsletter. Make sure you're connected with her on LinkedIn. I will, of course, as always, put those links down into the show notes. Thank you, Erin, so much for being a part of the Transmit Safety Network.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being a part of the Transmit Safety Network. Go to transmitsafety.com to sign up for our weekly newsletter.